Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. State and local police wrote more than 6,000 tickets for drivers who were texting while behind the wheel last year. That's more than five times the number they wrote in the first year of the ban back in 2011. And honestly, I thought the number would be much higher because, truth be told, we've all seen people text and drive. You probably just even saw it today, every day. I'm sure you see someone do it and maybe even do it yourself while you're behind the wheel. But cell phone technology and smartphone technology, they are here to stay. And it's not just texting. It's GPS apps, email, Waze, all the incredibly useful things your smartphone helps you do while you're in the car. And that is a big problem because federal research finds that distracted driving accounts for nearly one in five crashes in the United States. So that got us wondering, how do we really change what's now become a very common driving behavior? We want to explore that question today with Emily Stein. She's president of the Safe Roads Alliance, and she joins us now. Emily, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, Meghna. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. Also with us today is Earl Miller. He's a professor of neuroscience at MIT. Professor Miller, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And listeners, we know that you've seen texting while driving, and maybe you've even done it yourself. If you're behind the wheel right now, though, pull over before you call us at 1-800-423-8255 or 800-423-TALK. We're interested in hearing from any and all of you about whether or not we as a society fully realize how dangerous texting while driving is. And what do you think we can do to stop this form of distracted driving, especially given all of the other apps and functions that we were talking about, smartphones, and they give us while we're driving? Are there technological solutions, behavioral solutions, policy solutions? Let us know at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet, but again, don't do it if you're on your phone and driving. We're at Radio Boston. Emily, I want to start with you, actually, and if we could, your personal take on this, because your own life experience really brings home how important this issue is, because I understand you became a safe driving expert, or advocate, excuse me, after losing your father. Can you tell us that story?
Yeah. It was 2011, so it's been 5 years this past April. And I was always raised, you know, under the guidance that you do everything before you drive. There, you know, distracted driving has existed since cars have existed, but cell phones were just coming out when I was learning to drive. So to find out that my dad was killed by someone who was distracted behind the wheel, by someone who was programming their GPS, something that unfortunately is still legal to do in Massachusetts, it was just such devastating. I mean, it was devastating, period. But when you find out that you've lost one of the most important people in your lives because of something so preventable, that really drove home to me how much we need to educate drivers, how much, you know, enforcement needs to change, how we need to take this issue so seriously.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to ask you in a minute, Emily, about all the things that maybe we can and should do or consider doing to curb, as you said, and I think we can't underscore this enough, something that should be entirely preventable. But hang on there, because I want to bring Professor Miller into this conversation, because it feels like there's something fundamentally different about smartphones and our inability to put them down even while in the car. I mean, there's been a lot of discussion and research about this. Is it true that we are hardwired to immediately respond to the kind of stimulus that these phones give us, and so therefore it's just that much harder to put them down in the car?
We are. Our brains evolved in a very different environment. Many, many years ago, when we first evolved our human brains, it was an information-poor environment. And new information was often critical to survival. Like some rustling in the bushes might mean a tiger's going to leap out at you. So it was adaptive for our brains to evolve to crave information, to find information rewarding. But our brains also have a very limited capacity for simultaneous thought. We only can really think about one thing at a time. And we evolved that because we evolved in this information-poor environment where there wasn't a lot of things to pay attention to, so we could focus on one thing at a time.
Okay, so but everyone thinks that they can multitask.
It's one of the brain's great delusions.
So you're saying that the research is showing us that no matter how much we think we can, when our attention is drawn to something else, like a bling because a text message comes through, that all of our brain power is on that new task?
That's right. That's right. You have the illusion that you can multitask. What you're actually doing is task switching back and forth between the tasks. And you don't notice the switching because it would be too jarring for your mind to be conscious of the switching back and forth. So your brain sort of papers it over, ignores it. But you really are only paying attention to one thing at a time, and there's nothing we could do about it. In fact, studies have shown that the people who think they're the best at multitasking, you bring them in the lab, you test them, they're the worst at it. There's an inverse relationship between perceived ability at multitasking and actual ability.
Okay.
And the reason is because people who multitask the most, who think they're the best at it, they're doing it because they can't resist the urge, and they rationalize it by convincing themselves they're good at it when they're not.
So hold that thought, because Emily, I read here that when the Boston Globe dug into, and we should give a hat tip to them for their reporting, for getting us to think about this today, when the Globe dug into the 18,000 tickets that were written in Massachusetts since the 2011 texting and driving ban went into effect, they found that more than 3/4 of the tickets went to people under the age of 41. Now, I mean, I don't mean to stereotype here, but I feel as if young people are more likely to think that they can successfully multitask in the car than maybe someone who's older and a little less au fait with technology.
Right. I mean, it's wild when I see my 4-year-old and she just knows how to use the phone. And I think it's the same with teenagers, where it's just, you know, they've done research where when you take a phone away from a high school student, some of them respond as if they lost an arm, as if they lost a part of themselves. So I think it's just this generation that has grown up with this technology. However, some research is showing that, it all depends where you look, but some is showing that it's the 30, you know, the mid-20s to mid-30 age group that is the most guilty of using their phones behind the wheel. Mm. So I think some campaigns are reaching teenagers, so they might be less likely. I think the group that I'm really trying to focus on now is parents of young kids.
Right.
Who are in their early 30s, mid-30s, and we have the pressure of work. We have the pressure of a young family. And I see it every day. They're not only modeling this really unsafe behavior for their young children, but they're also putting their kids at risk.
Yeah,
it's almost like smoking in the car.
This is a really interesting point, Emily, and I want to get Professor Miller's reflections on it, because I, a couple years ago, went to this little women's conference, and a mom actually stood up and said something very similar to what Emily just said, that not only was she worried about the modeling that she was doing while having her phone with her and driving to her kids in the car, but she also said it occurred to her that she hadn't been in a car recently where there weren't screens in the back seat to entertain kids, and so she worried that they were laying down behavioral patterns at a young age to expect distractions or electronic inputs, that kind of thing, from the time kids are young, that is just part of the driving experience. I mean, was she onto something there?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, your brain is kind of like a muscle. The more you do something, the more likely more easy it is for your brain to think along those lines. So if you grow up with these distractions, you grow up with screens in the car, you get used to it, and you become desensitized to it, because your brain just wants to do the same thing over and over again. So I think this parents modeling good behavior in the car for their children is a very important point.
Mm. Now, what about what actually happens neurologically when the little text message pops up? I mean, I've read before that it does. You said it's is it akin to that rustling in the wilderness that we had to quickly respond to?
It is. It's that informational tap on the shoulder. Your brain evolved to find information rewarding, new information rewarding, because it was so adaptive. So that cell phone binging, the text coming in, it's all, we just can't resist the urge to respond to that informational tap on the shoulder because of the way our brains are wired.
Okay. Well, in that case, both Emily and Earl, let me ask you, I mean, if we are dealing with something which can be so potentially dangerous, and it seems as if it's really tapping into an almost primal neurological response that or maybe we can't even consciously control. Is there a better solution than to just tell people to put their phones in the trunk when they're in the car?
Well, that would be a good solution. I think the way, since you can't resist that urge to respond to new information, what you have to do is you have to plan to focus. You have to put away the cell phone you drive. Make sure it's out of reach. Put it in your bag or in your turn it off if you have to. Put it in the trunk of your car, put it in your glove compartment, somewhere where you can't get at it. You won't be distracted by it. Mm-hmm. And one point I want to make is we keep talking about texting and driving, but it's just having a conversation is a distraction when you drive. And even hands-free headsets don't help much. It's the actual cognitive demands of a conversation that are the distraction.
Yeah.
Studies have shown that in driving simulation that when people are actually just having a conversation, they miss as much as half the things in the road in front of them.
Emily, your thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, when we give presentations, we give exactly that information, that hands-free is not risk-free, that having a conversation risk-free, I mean, hands-free or handheld, it is the same as driving under the influence with a 0.08 blood alcohol level. And what I always tell students and adults in presentations is turn your phone on silent, put it where you can't reach, and come up with a day, whether it's Mother's Day, Father's Day coming up, your birthday, where it's 2 weeks or a month out, and give yourself that challenge to just try driving. Like we have this hashtag we're using, just drive.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, people will notice that this is an addictive behavior. But after those 2 weeks, I really think that people will realize, yeah, I don't need to answer every message. And they might find driving actually much more enjoyable because they're not in that response mode, ready to answer
yeah.
the next email that comes in. So that's something that I always like to do is give that challenge. Say, okay, Father's Day is coming up. Do this for your father.
Yeah, just drive. Exactly. Yeah. Well, we're talking about the analysis in today's Boston Globe that five times as many tickets for texting while driving were given out in Massachusetts last year as, in comparison to the first year that texting was banned while behind the wheel several years ago back in 2011. So a sharp spike in the number of people being caught doing it. But the question is, what can we do to change driver behavior overall to reduce the amount of texting or phone usage while driving? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And we're speaking today with Emily Stein, who's president of the Safe Roads Alliance, and with Earl Miller, professor of neuroscience at MIT. And we have a tweet here from E.F. Sweetman who says, "You don't want to destroy lives, so put down your phone when you drive." That was E.F.'s advice to a woman who almost killed me in the crosswalk. So a reality check there from the streets of Boston. We've got a lot of callers who want to join us, so let's turn to them. Paul is calling from Beverly. You're on the air, Paul.
Yes, I love your show. Thank you very much. I'm a senior advocate, and I've been doing this for about 25 years. It's about distracted driving. And the first thing I do at my seminar, which is a free seminar, usually at senior centers, I hold up my cell phone, and I said, this is the number one killer. Not so much for seniors, but it can be 60-year-old seniors, but for our children, our grandchildren. The second thing I mention is I've driven with my brother Pat, and I try to text. After a while, your brain works funny. After a while, you're paying attention to the text and not the driving. And I start to go off the road. I can drive better with my eyes closed for a longer period of time and go straighter, because my brain is just thinking about what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And once you do the texting and you look down, it's very dangerous.
Yeah. Well, Paul, thank you so much for your call and for your advocacy work as well. Anything we can do to make the streets safer is always appreciated. Let's turn to Alex, who's calling from Medford. You're on the air, Alex.
I'd just like to say that, you know, I think cars are very dangerous in of themselves. And, you know, if you take the phone of the driver and put it in their hands, and like you were saying with the, you know, brain not being able to juggle two tasks at once, it just seems kind of strange to me that people are so willing to put themselves in such a dangerous situation that, like, you know, everybody is saying, it seems so preventable. And, you know, I would like to say that cars are dangerous whether you're, you know, inebriated, whether you're fully focused, whether, you know, you're, you know, texting or what, there's always going to be something out of your control that you kind of have to watch out for.
Yeah. Alex, thank you so much for your call, because you brought something up that I want to ask both Emily and Earl. You know, Emily, I was thinking, we were thinking throughout the course of the day here at Radio Boston, you know, what are lessons that we could learn, say, from efforts to curb drunk driving, right? Because there was a behavior that was clearly very dangerous, and we made it as a society socially unacceptable. But I wonder, and that, you know, hopefully through public awareness campaigns and education and more strict law enforcement had a positive effect in terms of curbing drunk driving. But I wonder if the same thing can be done with things like texting and using your phone while driving, because these phones are socially acceptable parts of our lives. They're only central to many aspects of how we live today. So are there lessons we can take from anti-drunk driving efforts and apply them to distracted driving?
Well, that's what I've been trying to do for the past year. I think, yes, there are definitely lessons to be learned back when MAD was formed. It was just easier to reach people. The designated driver campaign happened in the late 80s, and there were 4 network channels, and that was it. So it's trying to reach so many people through so many different ways, through social media, through mainstream media. What we're trying to do is we formed a partnership that includes researchers, advocates, safety organizations, and we're trying to see who are the players. Corporations need to educate their employees.
Mm-hmm.
They need to come up with a safe driving policy.
Yeah.
Social media, you know, we have 1 billion users on Facebook, and why isn't Facebook standing up and saying, we do not allow or we do not condone use of our media while driving?
So we can, if sufficiently motivated, create some kind of social campaign. Emily, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I want to get another call here and then turn back to Professor Miller. So let's go to Earl, who's calling from Quincy. You're on the air, Earl.
Hi, thanks for having me. It seems to me that the onus should be on the smartphone providers. I know the Waze app has, if you're driving in the car, it says, oh, we can tell you're moving. Are you the passenger? So if they add a number of different prompts that make it impossible for the driver to text while driving or use a phone while driving, it just seems to me like they have the technology to be able to do that, and that would eliminate the problem.
Great point, Earl. Mm-hmm. Actually, Professor Earl Miller, what are your thoughts about that, about using technology to solve the technological problem?
Oh, I agree. It's well within the capabilities of smartphone technology to turn off texting, turn off the go into airplane mode when you're traveling at a certain speed. It's going to save lives, so I think that's a good idea. But I'll also add that, you know, if I'm not a policy person, but I do know from being a learning scientist that if you make it costly for people to text, use their cell phone when they drive, you'll change behavior. And you do that by raising the penalties, which is just what the Boston police are doing, ticketing more and raise if you cause an accident and it records show you were using the phone or texting while you're driving, the penalties should be high. And that's how they combated drunken driving. They raised the penalties, then had a public campaign to let people be aware of the not only the penalties, but the consequences of drunken driving. I don't see why distracted driving should be any different.
Emily, do you think we could make headway on that? Because I remember, I mean, I was covering transportation on Beacon Hill when lawmakers were debating the texting ban. And it seemed like it should have been a no-brainer to me, but there was actually a significant amount of debate about whether the state should even pass this law. So, you know, taking Professor Miller's point to heart, like if we wanted to even further increase the penalties, that might seem a difficult mountain to climb.
Yeah, I mean that's I fully agree. If, you know, right now if someone's caught texting, their first offense, it's $100. It's still $100, but a lot of people don't blink an eye at that. If it was $500 for the first offense and $1,000 for a second, I really think people would start changing their behavior. So if we do go for the purse strings, I think there will be a significant change. In terms of policy, I mean, we've been trying to pass the hands-free bill for the third time. It passed overwhelmingly in the Senate, and it's been up maybe 7 times in the House, and they've yet to debate it. So we're really hoping we can pass it, but that will be the next battle, is to increase the fines. And we've seen that in various states around the country that have passed hands-free. several years ago, and now they're at that stage of increasing the fines.
Right.
So I think it's just, unfortunately, a slow road.
A slow road. Well, hopefully we can get ourselves further down that road in a timely manner. And yet it suddenly also occurs to me that it's not just the phones, the cars themselves with those big center consoles and a lot of interactivity there also serve as potential places to distract drivers. So everyone out there, when you get behind the wheel, think of yourself, as Emily said, think of your family, think of the family members of every person who's around you, and try to limit your distractions. That's my PSA from Radio Boston today. Emily Stein, president of the Safe Roads Alliance, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you again.
And Earl Miller, professor of neuroscience at MIT, thank you as well.
Thank you.
And listeners, send us your comments on what you think we can and should be doing to curb distracted driving on Massachusetts streets. Go to our website and do that. It's radioboston.org. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.